The Five Rings Podcast, Road to Tokyo on the Sport Podcasting Network. Your weekly fix leading up to the 2020 Olympic Games with Dwayne Rollins and Kevin Laramie. Follow us and listen to us live on Twitter at Five Rings Podcast and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network for more content.
Good day.
Good night.
And welcome to the Five Rings Podcast. I'm Kevin Laramie, joined by Dwayne Rollins as always. How you doing, Dwayne?
I'm doing well. Week two of the Five Rings reboot. Very exciting. I'm doing this live from the 46th floor of my new condo. So there you go. It's all fun. I'm looking at the tower right now.
Yeah, you're living high. You're living really high in a condo building. So nice views from Dwayne's new place. I'm in the stadium right now where there's going to be some track and field one day, but no, it's all illusion. It's smoke and mirrors, as we say. Tokyo 2020, less than a year away, Dwayne, and we'll talk about the hockey stadium. I want to talk to you about the hockey stadium later on, and I'll read an article that is straight from Tokyo 2020's organization, but it does illustrate some efforts that they are doing towards environmental issues, and I think it's a very apropos topic. But the FIBA World Cup is underway. Canada is out already. This feels like a proper World Cup to me. Canada's not even in the contenders, so I'm used to that.
Well, it can't be a proper World Cup. Canada wouldn't be there. No, look, I mean, we're not doing gold, silver, bronze, wood medals in this one, but we definitely would give it a wood medal to not just the Canadian performance, but to the lack of roster build there. Canada has the second most NBA players in the world in terms of roster spaces in the NBA. Well-known best basketball team, league, in the world, yet this roster is nothing to do with that. So many players saying no to representing Canada in this. It's incredibly frustrating for those that watch the Canadian basketball program and know how good this team could be if they all would just show up, but they just don't show up. It's not a problem that's only happening in Canada. The U.S. has had a lot of players move away. Of course, the U.S. has 90% of the world's best basketball players, so they can afford that. It's infuriating, but it's also understandable. These guys make millions from their club team, their NBA team, and the Canadian basketball is paying them a stipend. So they're just choosing to turn around and focus on staying healthy for training camp coming in a couple months for the NBA. It's a little sad, but it is the reality.
How should we treat this competition if the players don't even treat it the way a World Cup should be treated? How do you bridge the gap of what a FIFA World Cup looks like compared to a FIBA World Cup looking like? We would love to see the Basketball World Cup, Dwayne, being on the same level of the Soccer World Cup, but it seems like multiple parties involved in the World Cup itself do not treat it the way that FIFA does.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about FIFA is they've got the head start, right? The reason the World Cup became the biggest competition is because they put all the attention into it early on in the 30s when they started it up, and they moved away and totally aggressively decided to take on the idea that the Olympics was the most important championship you could win. If you look back at the historical Hungarian team that was considered the world's best back in the day, they won the Olympics and were looked at as being very good because of that. But the FIFA World Cup has quickly moved away from that, being there, quickly moved to be the bad recognized best and most important competition in the world, and they were able to overcome that and to fight for that. And we've seen people like FIBA and the NHL, for that matter, try and create World Cup branded competitions to rival to emulate the FIFA World Cup. And it just hasn't really worked in the same capacity because the players themselves don't recognize these, or they don't feel right. They don't feel like this is more important than the Olympic competition. And if you look at basketball, the dream team was the thing. Barcelona is what propelled the Olympics as the clear one international competition that matters way, way, way above all others. And for FIBA to come in and try and change that direction and create this new sort of model, it's going to take a lot of time. It is taken seriously by a lot of the European and Asian you know, other areas of the world, they take it seriously. But if the U.S. best players are turning away from it, and now, when as I said earlier, the second biggest country in the world when it comes to players in the NBA is the one that I am, that you and I am sitting in. If we aren't taking it seriously, our players, then it is hard to argue that this is not a secondary competition. So that's kind of where we're at right now. And unfortunately, I don't know what the answer is other than time. Maybe in time it will be recognized as bigger. But I don't know if the Olympics, the five rings, that there's a reason we don't call this, you know, the FIBA World Cup rings, right? It has its own something to it.
It does. And the basketball competition in the Olympics does represent a big part of what draws the attention in the Summer Games is the basketball tournament with the Dream Team USA, famous in 1992, the first time ever, when we're in Barcelona with the basketball players from the NBA. It was a famous tournament, and since then, it was almost a moot tournament because USA would literally just win everything and by, what, 40 points, 30 points easily. Make a couple losses here and there, and now for the first time maybe in a long time, the field is a bit more open, especially for the World Cup right now. But when come times for the Olympics, of course the U.S. are going to have the best team there. The best players are probably going to go. Some will choose not to, like the past. But what about Canada, a team that is not necessarily a bunch of misfits, but a lot of different type of players trying to gel together with the new addition, like of RJ Barrett, the new professional player who was just drafted by the Knicks coming out of Duke in the NCAA, maybe the best Canadian player, the potential to be, Dwayne. So that's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if it's not a lost opportunity for the Canadian team to get a chance to be together, to practice, and to play under Coach Nick Nurse, who will be the coach of the Olympics next year too, the coach of the Toronto Raptors as well. But this is maybe a lost opportunity for Canadian basketball, I believe.
Oh, for sure. I mean, look, I'm sitting in the city of Toronto, which, you know, I can't walk 2 inches in the city right now without seeing We the North and We the Champs and all that sort of stuff. There's murals all over the city. It really is still months later everywhere, and still people, you know, look back fondly on that night in June that you know, many of us have followed that team for a long time, never thought we'd ever see. So it is just a huge moment for Canadian basketball that way. You know, there was only one player on that team that was Canadian, and he did not contribute anything in the playoffs. So you can argue whether that was a Canadian achievement or not, but what
Chris Boucher from Montreal North.
There you go. So yes, there's that one player that was on the roster, but certainly not a massive part of the championship team. But whether, you know, it wasn't a Canadian accomplishment. I'll just finish it off. You know, what's happening at the U.S. Open and the women's side of the draw, that's a Canadian accomplishment, Tennis Canada and the player involved. But what that was just a team that was based in Canada. But what it also was an opportunity, and it's an opportunity that really is slipping by further and further in terms of national teamness. You know, the Raptors winning the World Cup, the Raptors winning the NBA championship will absolutely have long-lasting impact in terms of young players playing the game in the city that I'm in particular. But
yeah.
But will it matter to a Canadian national team program? I don't know about that. And will it matter? Does that matter? Well, that's a debate we all have to have with ourselves. The question, Kevin, I have before I let you jump back in is you know, you mentioned about opportunity and how good the Canadian team could be. Well, they have to get to a damn Olympics before we worry about whether they're going to perform well in them, and right now I don't have any confidence that anyone will show up for the qualifying process that they're now going to have to go through to get there.
If that tournament would have been a great way to avoid some of the crux and challenges of the qualifying process for FIBA and the Olympics. Dwayne, you remember 4 years ago when we missed the Olympic tournament, the basketball, we talked about it, same situation, the World Cup as well. I have a feeling of deja vu. I have seen this movie before. And guess what? Usually Canada doesn't make it.
Yeah, well, yeah, for those that forget, Venezuela, which was massively below Canada in the rankings, and Canada had blown up earlier in that tournament, that qualifying tournament, took them out in the game that was one and go, right? So you want to avoid that opportunity. Like, they can still get there. The talent is still there. And I do tend to believe that Canada will get a more representative lineup for the Olympic qualifying tournament because – the players will want to go to Olympics. I believe that if Canada were to get to an Olympics, that they would get a full lineup because the players want to be there because that is the big show.
Yeah. But it's in Tokyo, though. So some players didn't want to go to Rio. Rio is a lot closer, and there's a culture shock, yeah, but maybe not the same as the first time you sat down to eat a meal once you get to Tokyo. That's... me, we're all different. I see it as an opportunity, and trust me, if I could go to Tokyo right now, I would to play a sport. Yeah, but I'm a bit different. If I'm a multimillionaire 22-year-old who is now a superstar in the NBA and coming in with some expectations, do I risk going into a tournament injuring myself or before my second season after maybe winning Rookie of the Year for the Knicks, RJ Barrett? Am I going to risk it? But the thing is that I don't understand is his father's the freaking director of Basketball Canada. Where are you, RJ? Where are you?
Yeah, well, they all have a reason, right? An injury or a tweak or I'm in a contract year or whatever. They all have a reason. And look, the questions that we have to ask are whether those reasons are legit, whether Basketball Canada can do anything to prevent these reasons. I mean, look at the people involved with Basketball Canada. You mentioned RJ Barrett's father, who was a professional himself, Steve Nash, Hall of Famer. Steve Nash was the GM of it. He's taken a step back since then, but he was still involved as sort of the guy. And it was always said, you know, when he came in, oh, that this is going to be the difference. Steve Nash, they all respect Steve Nash. So if he calls, they're not going to turn him down. Well, they won't if it's the Olympics. And I, you know, you might get one or two that say no, but by and large, you'd have a pretty strong team there. But the point is, like, I'm at the point now where I wonder whether I even want to see those guys go to the Olympics. I probably would if they got there, but yeah, you kind of feel that the folks that get them there should get exactly the reward as well.
I agree. But that brings me to this to finish on the basketball conversation. How important is international basketball anyway? It's not a part of our identity, I guess. It doesn't draw the crowds like a World Cup would. Doesn't matter which nationality you are. I've seen my own eyes France winning the World Cup, and I kind of went into the street and celebrated. That part of the day is a bit blurry to me, but that's what I was told that I did. So I guess I did. So is it part of our identity yet? Could it be? Is it necessary, and should we even care about international basketball? That's what I'm thinking at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, is the 200-meter individual medley part of our identity? You know, it's a philosophical question we get into, but we're the Olympics are part of our identity is what I would say to that. Is a World Cup of anything other than soccer relevant to people? And that's a difficult question to say it is on a global sense to. I don't know what would have happened. We're never going to find out. Canada, as you say, has been eliminated from the FIFA World Cup. So we're never going to find out what would have happened if they got on a roll at this tournament with a full lineup. But, you know, and it would have been challenging because of the time zones, and it's on DAZN, which is an over-the-top service here in Canada that we talk about a lot in our soccer show. Yeah. So it's hard to see. It's not, you know, not just on TSN and getting replayed all day. So there's all those factors playing in. And the fact that it's, you know, I'm guessing the Olympics aren't going to be on DAZN. So there you go.
DAZN might have a lot of money, but they don't have that amount of money. You know, can you imagine if the next bidding process of DAZN takes part of it? Oh, my God.
I imagine the DAZN probably will take part in the next bidding process.
Yeah, but I think we've seen a few networks be burned by the bidding process by bidding low. And we're seeing a lot of networks now refraining from getting a lot of property rights, probably for saving money for the big ones, which is the hockey here in Canada, NFL if you're in the States, and also the Olympics if you are anywhere in the world. This is like the prime property that at least once every 2 years give you 2 weeks of full attention and a couple weeks before, a couple weeks after of retention.
Yeah, World Cups as well would factor into the World Cup. So, see, that just betrayed it right there. I said the World Cup, and you all knew what I meant by that, and I wasn't talking about basketball, was I?
No, you weren't. You were talking about the World Cup, the one and only World Cup, on both sides of the gender, though. And that's, at least, when you say World Cup, I think about the Women's World Cup before the Basketball World Cup. That's how entrenched I am of associating the terms World Cup with soccer, football.
No, precisely. Again, this goes back to my original point. It's very difficult to emulate what soccer has because you just don't have the history behind it. There was a world championship of basketball forever, and all they've really done is expanded the tournament and rebranded it World Cup. And I don't think it tricks any. Well, look, as I said, there are people in the world that take it seriously, but it's the same type of people that took the world championship seriously. Are they taking it any more seriously now that it's called the World Cup? I don't know. I doubt it. And when you're talking about these best-on-best situations, you know, I mentioned hockey earlier in this. I think the NHL and what happened in Pyeongchang is also relevant to it. And that, you know, Russia won. So I'll answer my own question. But, you know, do you remember the final?
No. I did not even watch a gold medal game because it was like, what's the point to watch?
Yeah. Do you remember the World Cup of hockey final either? That's what I'll say. The only reason I do is because I was at it. And it's the true reason I was at it is because I bought a ticket for $10 to get into it.
That's true. StubHub. But, you know, I can tell you where I was when Mario Lemieux scored in 2002 to win the gold medal. Well, actually, no, Mario Lemieux didn't score. He just let the puck go between his leg. Paul Carrier scored. That was a great time. But I remember, right? Where were you in 2010? Gold medal game. Sidney Crosby, off the board. Here, get the puck. And he scored. 2014, Mike Babcock telling his defenders, stop everything and play the trap. I remember that. I don't remember. You're right. You just nailed another point. And I guess it's interesting to see. Now, there's a little news component to the show today that I want to talk about. But it's not necessarily news. It's more like you were mentioning earlier in the show, you mentioned Tennis Canada. And looking forward to the Tennis Olympic Tournament next year. If you're a Canadian, there's a couple of medal potential there, Dwayne. And that would be amazing. And the women's side, of course, Bianca Andreescu. Hard surface is one of her favorite ones. And she just won Indian Wells this year, the Rogers Cup in Toronto. And she's in the quarterfinals now of the U.S. Open in New York, Flushing Meadows. So she's going to give Canada a lot of potential. But in the men's side, too, Felix Auger-Aliassime, Denis Shapovalov, Milos Raonic, if he can finally get healthy. Yeah, get rid of injuries and get healthy. So you're seeing Tennis Canada with an amazing contingent going into Tokyo 2020.
Absolutely. And tennis is a great example of how you can have your cake and eat it, too. No one has taken the Olympic tournament in tennis is... It's not a major, but it is still important. It's important in a way that is understandable to people, and it has relevance, right? So these sports that try and like take it all away and try and get all the attention back themselves, I think they're missing the point. You know, in terms of Canada, in tennis right now, it's, you know, Bianca might be the next number one player in the world after the Williams go away, which may never be ever happen because they're timeless. But yeah.
Yeah, but Father Time is still undefeated. And eventually, body wear and tear wins. And it's going to happen. Might take another 5 years. But you're right, Bianca Andreescu. If she continues on the path that she's on now. I don't want to compare things too much. But we've seen Canadian players in the recent years coming to a great rise and play and becoming superstars and then dropping off the face of the earth like they were named Alicia Silverstone in 1999.
Yeah, I don't think that we're going to see Bianca on the cover of GQ or Cosmo anytime soon. If I'm thinking about the same person you might be thinking of here. The only concern I have with her is her injuries because she's a beast. Like, she's a strong, strong woman. And I think that might break her body down a little bit. So my fear's there. But I don't have fears that she's going to lose focus. That is one of the singularly most focused teenagers I have ever seen in my life.
Teenagers, Wayne. We forget she's 19 years old.
Yeah, she's a teenager still, and because she doesn't look like a teenager, she looks like a 25-year-old woman. That's how strong she is, right? She's this wasn't meant to be a tennis show. This wasn't on the agenda, but it is certainly front and center right now. And you know, it's always interesting watching this country react to one of our tennis players going deep in a major, and we haven't yet got over that hump yet. But if she wins, if Bianca, she might already be the Canadian athlete of the year. Maybe already.
I agree.
But yeah.
And you know,
she wins it. She wins the Flushing Meadows. Give it to her now.
She's the first Canadian woman to be in the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open since Patricia Hiboulet in 1992. And further she goes, it's uncharted territory for a woman at U.S. Open, Canadian woman at U.S. Open, is what she's doing now. So no, it does give me a lot of anticipation for Tokyo 2020 when I think about the women's and the men's tennis tournament, which will be amazing and will be a sight to see. Speaking of tournament and things that will be amazing and a sight to see, Dwayne, I want to talk to you about a little bit about the hockey stadium, the OI Hockey Stadium, who was inaugurated on August 17th, and already the test event took place. But I'm going to read you a little article that does explain the stadium itself and also does give a little bit of a background on the efforts that are done to make these games maybe the most sustainable games ever. With under a year until the Tokyo 2020 Olympic Games, the newly completed OI Hockey Stadium was officially inaugurated on August 17th. The stadium, which is in a waterfront area of Tokyo Bay, consists of two pitches that during the game times is expected to hold up to 10,000 and 5,000 fans, respectively. The turf at the stadium is the first of its kind in the sport and is made from regrowable raw materials. It was designed to support Tokyo's carbon neutral targets, as well as the International Hockey Federation's commitment to sustainable hockey, and is made from 60% sugarcane, meaning it requires two-thirds less water than previous Olympic turfs. I'll continue the article in a second, Dwayne, but that's kind of amazing, just the turf aspect and the new technology with cane sugar in a regrowable raw material type of pitch surface.
Look, cynical people will suggest that these type of releases are about trying to save face and do all these sort of stuff. But really, I do think that if you carefully look at the Olympic movement, carefully look at the IOC and put away your perceptions of what happened in the past, and I'm not going to suggest that it's perfect, but if you really look at them under Bok, they have been doing things to address the concerns that people have, because I think that they do hear the rumbling of the minority out there that want the games gone. You know, there are, as we said last week, there are people out there that just have this agenda, and they want to take down the big bad IOC, and, you know, in doing so, hurt all of the athletes that benefit from these games and hurt all of the fans that enjoy them immensely, just because they don't like the politics of the IOC. They don't like, you know, the environmental impact of games. They don't like the economic impact of games. And those are fair concerns, and they need to be addressed. And I think that this is an example of how the IOC and the organizing committees, the NOCs, are listening and are doing things to try and create sustainable playing environments, to create more economically responsible games. And this is another example of that, I do believe. So, you know, we're always right to be a little cynical when we're listening to any claims. You know, what do we talk about a lot when we talk about biddings, hard, soft benefits and all that sort of stuff, and having to understand what's truly an economic benefit, while having to understand what truly is being said and what is marketing and what is spin. But it's also, I think, as equal as much as it is wrong to just accept anything at face value, it's also wrong to not accept things at face value. You know what I mean?
You have to be neutral in both ways and always find the fact that truth usually is somewhere in the middle of everything on both sides. I'll just continue quickly with the rest of the article. After the ceremony to open the stadium, the Ready Steady Tokyo Hockey Test event got underway with 8 teams across the men's and women's competitions, including Japan, India, Malaysia, New Zealand, Australia, and China, which saw athletes play at the newly built venue for the first time. The initiative is part, we pride ourselves at the Hockey Roos, which is the Australia Hockey Federation, Soccer Roos, Hockey Roos, to try and do our part of the environment. And I think as hockey, as sport, to be able to produce a pitch of this quality and that has less impact on the environment is something that's going to be great for the future of not only the world, but hockey, Australian National Women's Hockey co-captain Emily Chalker said. The initiative is part of Tokyo 2020's continued efforts to build a sustainable games as they use technologies to minimize the impact on the environment. This includes using self-generated generate energy sources at 37 of the 38 Olympic and Paralympic venues, which sees the installation of solar power generation systems, solar heat utilization systems, and both geothermal heating and cooling systems. Meanwhile, the medals used during the 2020 Olympic Games have been manufactured using 100% of metals collected from used electronic devices, which includes gold, silver, and bronze, because those things all exist in your mobile devices, which gives us a little idea of how deep that thought process was of being sustainable, of finding ways to do these things, and finding new ways to have a hockey pitch and just to do medals out of old cell phones. But I think, of course, the cynical side is like, oh yeah, it's all well and good, but at least maybe we might have the closest thing to a sustainability during the Olympic Games next year.
Yeah, and there's no such thing as 100%, but for sure, it's good to hear these sort of initiatives being taken. The medals sound real cool to me, and I, you know, part of that's probably a bit spinny, but it's kind of fun, and it sort of fits with the image we have of Japan being tech giants, and to recycle the cell phone, it's kind of fun. You know, the millennials get another cell phone award. That's kind of, you know, because they all are going to be, actually, there'll be a lot of Gen Zers in the Olympics now. Oof, God, we're getting old. But anyway,
millennials,
they sound like fun medals.
The millennials will be the veterans at these Olympics, if not like close to retiring.
Yeah.
That's old we are. That's all I'm getting. Yeah, not a lot of 35-year-olds.
The oldest millennial is 30, 39 next year, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now I'm old, losing my hair. Yeah, not too bad, though. That's fine. But yeah, that's about it, Dwayne. But Road to Tokyo 2020, less than a year to go. We've looked at a few venues yet and still to come. There's going to be the big few competitions in the next coming weeks, but there was a world champion in Canada and a few, like, we don't want to do box scores, so that's why I didn't bring it up, but cycling is becoming, again, a strong suit for Canada cross country. Judo, Canada's really good, world champion in the last couple of weeks, and I'm starting to dig deep now into next year. Simone Biles, Dwayne, she's doing, again, amazing things in gymnastics. A few months ago in the world championship, she dominated. And there's going to be more of great athletes getting ready to amaze us in the next few months.
Absolutely, and we will events in the upcoming. If you listen to our last two Olympics, we just jumped straight in, but the last two Olympics that we did, we broke in with previews for all of them. It was a lot of work for the summer game. I loved it. I enjoyed it. So we'll get that stuff out again, and it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. But on that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larme, and this show at Five Rings Podcast. You can find the podcast version of the Five Rings anywhere you get your podcasts, and now including Spotify as well. Just look for Five Rings Podcast Road to Tokyo, and you can find our show. Until next week, as always, have a great Olympic amateur sports. Enjoy your coverage of the multitude of great sports. And if there's something you would like for us to talk about in the next few weeks, let us know on social media or on email, fiveringspodcast@gmail.com. But as always, until next time, enjoy your Olympic sports.